Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Gone are the days of wild nights with Van Morrison. Now his music is booze-free. This is Soundcheck. I'm Joel Meyer, one of the producers of the show, filling in for John Schaefer. As Van Morrison bans drinking at his concerts in England, we'll debate alcohol and the live music experience. And a little bit later, indie troubadour Damian Jurado plays live for us. But first, Van Morrison has told the Brighton Dome in Sussex, England, not to sell any alcohol before or during his performance earlier this month because it might disturb his singing. Morrison has battled alcohol addiction in the 70s and 80s and now is a teetotaler. In the meantime, some classical music concert halls are going in the opposite direction, allowing audience members to bring their drinks to their seats. So is booze music's friend or foe? There's just one way to settle this with another. To defend drinking, we didn't have to look any further than our own staff here at WNYC. Limor Tomer is our executive producer of music programming, and she's been a music presenter in New York for 10 years in places like the Whitney Museum and BAM Cafe. Against drinking is our old friend Will Lehman, a jazz critic who writes for PopMatters.com, NPR, and other publications. Limor, Will, get your glasses ready. All right, Limor, we're going to start with you. We've been asking our listeners on our website. You can post a comment there. We've been asking booze. Is it music's friend or foe? We're turning to you, Limor, as music's friend. Why?
Well, I think the minute you put you start putting restrictions on music, and you put it into a temple of art and start restricting no dancing, no drinking, no making out, whatever, it starts to atrophy immediately. It becomes sort of a petrified form of its old pulsating living self, and it becomes sort of a necrophilic experience, you know, looking at it in its static form. And so I say venues beware. Not allowing drinking in music venues eventually leads to conservatory students transcribing and memorizing John Zorn screeches, and that's the beginning of the end. And you need to look no further than what happened to classical music.
Okay. All right. Strong words from Limor Tomer. Over to you, Will Lehman. You are our anti-drinking guest today. What do you have to say to that?
Well, I want to say that, you know, having the pro-drinking point of view immediately take a shot at John Zorn seems a little out of left field, but as a jazz critic, I'm going to let it pass. I think that defending drinking in music venues on the basis that it's just good for the music, as opposed to the fact that it maybe is necessary to draw the crowds or necessary for the venue to make money, that just seems to me like a strange way to defend it. I've been to so many shows at rock clubs, primarily here outside of in Washington, D.C., which is where I live, and the number of guys screaming for Free Bird at, you know, a new pornographer's show, the number of, like, drunk people sort of grabbing my wife's bottom in the middle of the show, the number of times I felt funny about bringing my kids to a show that they would have loved, but I just don't feel comfortable with it. I think that's killing the music on some nights.
All right. Limor says it's killing the music. What is it about drinking at a concert that is more than just a money-making scheme to make me pay $12 for a glass of wine at a small cabaret club?
Well, first of all, I want to tell you where I'm coming from. I have to say that it seems like I'm paying some horrible karmic debt because I must have been some meanie record executive or something who stole from musicians, because I'm cursed with programming music in restaurants. BAM Cafe, restaurant. Whitney Museum, the music venue is Sarah Beth's restaurant. Two Boots in the East Village, okay, we weren't in a restaurant, we were under a restaurant, but basically you get it. And even here, every night we put on evening music, and guess what our listeners are doing? They're ordering out. So it's sort of like my debt that I'm paying. But I feel like music has had this pattern of being taken out of life and put into another context. And that is sort of what I'm against, because I just feel like when you are able to do things that connect you with the life force, like drinking, and it doesn't have to be alcohol. It could be water. God knows, I've drunk my share of water at venues. Then there are a lot of venues that will, you know, wrestle your water bottle away from you as you enter. And so it's about a level of intimacy and breaking down some barriers and making it a living experience for me.
But, you know, Limor, what about to bring up something that our drinking foe, Will, just mentioned, the harassment that his wife experiences.
I know.
On the,
I want to go to those clubs.
What about what about annoying fans, though? I mean, we've all been at a live music show that's been hindered because of a jerk next to you that is, you know, out of order.
You know, what can I say? We live in New York. Life is full of jerks, and you can't make judgments about alcohol and music based on the jerks. You have to make it based on something higher than that.
That's Limor Tomer. She's WNYC's executive producer of music programming. She's been booking concerts, many of them wet concerts in New York here for 10 years. Will Lehman is a jazz critic. He's our drinking foe on the line. Will, what do you say from a musician's point of view? I mean, as a critic, surely you've talked to many musicians about how they felt after a show. Does a drinking crowd make for a better crowd?
Well, I think that at a really high-energy rock show, a crowd that is having a great time is a wonderful thing. And, I think, you know, Limor is certainly right that you want to let people live. You want to let people have a good time. I think the dilemma is that at so many rock clubs, you know, people just go there and get wasted. And so, you know, I would never be against moderation. The problem is how common it is that it becomes a distraction. I mean, one of the concerts that I remember where I was just so annoyed by somebody, it was a concert by the band Fountains of Wayne. And it was a couple years out from them having the big hit with Stacy's Mom. And they're really a neat band. They have a lot of great songs. They're not really a one-hit wonder, but a lot of people only know Stacy's Mom. And this one guy, he could not wait to hear Stacy's Mom in between every song. And we were standing, you know, maybe 20 feet from the lip of the stage at the 930 Club in D.C., and he would scream for Stacy's Mom in between every song, and Adam Schlesinger, who happened to have written the tune and is the bass player in the band, I'm just sure that I saw him eye this guy a couple of times and shake his head as if to say, you know, man, when am I going to get to play for a better class of folks? And I would add just one other thing. I'm a critic, but I also play in a little bar band. You know, no big deal. We just fool around. We play for our friends. But there have been more than one show where I've been on the stage seeing my friends more interested in taking some shots at the rail than dance or have a good time. So the issue is really, when does drinking become a distraction? Something that goes too far. And I think for somebody like Van Morrison, you know, maybe what he's saying is, you know, I'm well known enough that I don't have to put up with it anymore. And I think he ought to have the right to be that way. The same way, you know, a jazz musician or a classical musician might have the right.
All right. Well, Will, I'm going to address the next question to Limor because I think this is interesting. We're already getting a lot of comments posted on the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. We invite you, musician or no, to leave a comment there. But Ben from Millburn, New Jersey, is in a band, and he says, if we didn't have booze at our shows, no one would come see us. Limor, how important is an ID club, let's say, to actually a band making money?
That's kind of complicated. And I think that a lot of club owners capitalize on that and use that to sort of to make that tie between music and booze. And we used to have a BAM Cafe. We used to have this phenomenal nun where it was really noisy. And there were always, you know, waiters walking around and saying, do you want fries with that in the middle of a really important music moment? And every once in a while, there'd be a band where you would actually feel like somebody was churning down what we called the silverware channel and just gripping the audience, and suddenly nothing mattered and everyone was focused. And so part of it is the power of the performer. I'm sorry. I mean, what can I say? If you can't get an audience unless you serve drinks, then maybe that's you've reached the where you're going to reach.
That's Limor Tomer. She's WNYC's executive producer of music programming and a show presenter around town. We've also been speaking with Will Lehman, a jazz critic who writes for PopMatters.com, NPR, and other publications. We want to hear from you. You can leave a comment on the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. You can also give us a call at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-9692.
Today on the Soundcheck blog.
If we're adult enough to earn the money to buy the tickets to attend your show, then treat us like adults. Now pour me a damn beer.
For the rest of the story, go to the Soundcheck blog at WNYC.org.
It just wouldn't be a Soundcheck without John Schaefer. He's on vacation today, but you can read his thoughts on our debate today on the role of alcohol in live music. Go to the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. You can read his blog there. You can also leave a comment, and you can give us a call as well. 212-433-9692. It's 212-433-WNYC. Well, let's talk a little bit about the difference in genres here, because we've been talking a little bit about maybe pop music or maybe rock music. We need to also pay attention to something that's happening in the classical world as well, too. I mean, of these things that are going on, Van Morrison banning alcoholic concerts in the UK. Also, around here at town, there are some venues that are letting people at classical venues actually bring wine to their seat, which had kind of previously unimaginable. What do you say to that? Is there, what could be possibly wrong with just bringing a gentle, non-threatening glass of wine to your seat?
Well, I don't want to sound too much like Barack Obama here and start agreeing with my opponent in a debate, because I'll get chided for that. But I've got to give a little ground here, because I think for me the biggest problem with alcohol at concerts is when it goes too far. And I wouldn't want to seem like I'm discriminating against rock music in favor of classical music or jazz or anything else. But I think a glass of wine in your seat in a place where people aren't dancing and banging into each other and standing literally hip to hip sounds a lot less sort of destructive and troublesome. Because I think the biggest problem I've had with alcohol at concerts is not that people are enjoying themselves, but that they become selfish. And in a venue that isn't designed to cram people together on a floor, standing and dancing and so on, it seems, I guess, less destructive. It was interesting. I was in London less than a year ago, and I was struck by the fact that when you go to the theater in London, you can even get ice cream and bring it to your seats, at the equivalent of like a Broadway show.
Now that's getting out of hand. That's just that's uncalled for.
That's right. Alcohol is okay, but sugar, oh my God.
Right.
But it made me rethink in that context the idea that of a theater or a music venue, and this goes back to what Lee Moore was saying, being like a human place where, you know, you don't have to exist in some sort of a bubble. And I agree with that. Most of the places where alcohol is going to get abused are places where there are fewer barriers. And that's, I think that's where it's become difficult for me. I mean, just the number of, the number of folks sort of screaming and yelling.
Lee Moore, you were part of some policy changes at Symphony Space. Why did that venue reconsider what was going on in the Thalia Theater?
Well, that was actually great. We were able to launch the Thalia Theater with the policy that, yes, you may bring beer and wine with you. And the way we did that was based on the Thalia's kind of DNA and past life as a movie theater, a really famous movie theater. It was made famous by that famous scene from Annie Hall. And so we said, where is the harm in that? Let's just try it. And it was actually easier to convince the suits to allow drinking than to convince the audience. I had to put up a huge sign on the door saying, yes, bring your beer, bring your wine. And then I would go on the stage and say, we're going to start in a few minutes. Why don't you go out, get a drink and come back and bring it in? And that was, it was just kind of stunning. The audience was stunned and it took them a while to believe it. And it made for a better experience. But I just want to get back to the Stacey's mom guy for a second. And just, can I just, Will, is that okay?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm dying to get back to that guy.
All right. So, there's another thing which kind of bugs me, which is this composer or musician as dictator, sort of dictating to me what I can and can't do while listening to their music. And I just don't buy it. Sorry, Bob. I mean, you put it out there. That's it. You can't dictate beyond that. And I know that musicians have a really tough time with that, but it's this separation thing that they need to get by. And if they make a huge mega hit and their fans are going to scream for it, you can't look at them with disdain and sort of, dismiss that.
Well, that's true enough, but how many, and you got to be honest about this, how many guys have you seen at concerts requesting Freebird when it wasn't, when it wasn't the right band.
And I think Schubert song recital, I've had that.
Yeah, and I think that they think they're being funny, and it's just like the oldest joke in the book, and it just becomes exhausting, you know? I mean, another moment that I remember, and I don't mean to just list all my personal experiences here, but...
That's, you know, just get it out.
Yeah, well, here's one. I was seeing Medeski, Martin, and Wood, and they're a neat band. Are they a jazz band? Are they sort of a jam band, a funk band? Who knows? But they're the kind of band that plays, you know, music worth listening carefully to, but now, lately, in venues, you know, that are a bit more raucous than that, and I'm sure that they're benefiting from that economically. But during the drum solo by Billy Martin, which often gets very quiet as he plays these different little percussion elements, a guy, again, standing not far from me on the floor, was convinced that he saw the lead guitar player from Fish, Trey Anastasio, up on this little balcony, because the rumor had been going around that Fish was in town and they were fans of Medeski, Martin, and Wood. And right in the middle of this drum solo, he's pointing and he's going, "It's Trey! It's Trey!" And the guy, who may or may not have been Trey, had to actually, you know, go back in and hide behind the door again. And it was just, again, I felt sorry for the musicians. I don't mean to elevate them and their artistry sort of above the audience, but...
So you know that there was alcohol involved in that story?
Well, good point. Given that we're talking about Medeski, Martin, and Wood.
Well, sometimes people are just jerks, you know.
That's true. And given the bands that I'm talking about, it's a possibility that this guy was high on other things.
All right. Will and Lee Moore, it's time to let some of our Soundcheck listeners in on the conversation. Barry from San Francisco posted a comment on our site, and he said, "American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco has introduced drinks to its venue, and apparently it's gone over really well." Barry from San Francisco writes to tell us that. Let's take a call as well, too, closer to home. Jerry is in New York. He says that at jazz clubs, people behave a little bit more quietly, but he's not so sure about another style. Jerry, what do you have to say?
Oh, yeah, hi. I've been to jazz clubs. Everybody has a drink, but everybody is listening to the music and interested in what's going on. And there may be a little talking during the music, but for the most part, they're respectful of it, and they're certainly respectful of one another. On the other hand, at a stadium rock concert, I would be a little scared of letting everybody drink as much beer as they want. Now, maybe that's a prejudice of mine. I'm not completely free of prejudices, I admit that, but I think the venue has a lot to do with the discussion here.
All right. Thanks for your call, Jerry. Lee Moore, do you think there's really a difference between alcohol being a negative effect in jazz clubs versus rock clubs? I think sometimes we get musicians here, even at Soundcheck, that say sometimes people just aren't paying attention at jazz clubs, and it can be disruptive to have people sort of chatting
Listen,
about.
You know, the deadliest words in the English language to me is jazz brunch. I mean, that just, I mean, that's just the worst, right? I mean, actually trying to invite people to come and eat your Eggs Benedict while ignoring some jazz trio in the background. I mean, there's nothing worse than that. And I get that. And I also understand that not everybody brings their higher self to a rock show, and that's unfortunate.
All right. Well, maybe when we get back, we can talk a little bit about this venue, the Music Hall of Williamsburg. It's a venue that's actually kind of put its bar down in the basement, and there really isn't a place to go and get a drink upstairs in the main hall. This band, The Kills, is going to be playing at the Music Hall of Williamsburg on Friday and Saturday. You're listening to Soundcheck.
Now I'm the only sour cherry on the fruit stand. Right, am I the only sour cherry on the fruit stand?
Up next, concerns about spills and the question of all ages shows. And later, Damian Jurado. He's been compared favorably to Bruce Springsteen and even Neil Young. He'll join us with his band to perform live. This is Soundcheck.
Secrets are best when left unsaid. Let
floodgates are open.
This is Soundcheck. I'm Joel Meyer in for John Schaefer. This is music by sax player and composer John Zorn. He's the artistic director of the East Village Club, The Stone, where drinking is not allowed. And that's the subject of our Soundcheck Smackdown today. Is booze music's friend or foe? Now, defending drinking is music presenter Limor Tomer, who is also executive producer of music programming right here at WNYC. And against drinking is jazz critic Will Lehman. How about you, Soundcheck listener? Do you like drinking with your music, or maybe do drinks and music not mix so well? You can call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Let's start with a call. Matt is calling us from a car in Pennsylvania. He's a traveling musician, quite obviously, because he's in a car. Matt, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, how you doing?
Are you actually traveling from gig to gig by any chance?
I am, actually.
And you're not drinking, correct?
No, I quit drinking about 5 years ago.
Okay, but you still perform for crowds that are alcohol-consuming crowds.
Yeah, I do, quite a bit.
And what do you think about it?
Well, I've been doing this for about 20 years, and for a lot of that 20 years I was drinking. And for the last five, I've been sober, and sometimes it's annoying. But it's my job as a musician, as a performer, to get that audience to listen to me regardless. And that's just kind of been my take on it. It's not that I always love it. Sometimes I enjoy playing a house concert or in a more of a performance space where people aren't drinking, but I really at the end of the day I feel like that's my job, is to win over whatever audience I'm in front of.
What's the difference in the crowds? You say you play for dry audiences and also for drinking audiences. How do they react differently to you?
Well, sometimes it's choosing your material correctly. Depending on the crowd, I do a lot of stuff in kind of the folk circuit, where I'll play a very formal house concert where it's an older crowd. They're not drinking at all. Sometimes at a church, and then conversely, I've done a lot of opening for bands like Bob Schneider out of Austin, where I'm playing, huge rock clubs where there's 700 people and everybody's hammered by the time I get on as the opener. So instead of maybe opening with my quietest, most introspective singer-songwriter song,
You'll go for something that's blazing.
I'm going to open with a cover of Danzig's Mother on a banjo ukulele.
Okay, well, thank
honestly.
All right, Matt. He's calling from a car in Pennsylvania. We're going to let him continue driving safely. But, Will, I want to ask you, he mentioned something about playing for crowds that are deliberately not drinking, sort of dry audiences. And I also want to ask you a little bit about all-ages shows, because I know, Will, that you're a high school teacher. And so what does it mean for kids, that big barrier of age 21?
Yeah, I teach high school kids, and I teach them music, actually. And one of the things that I think everybody knows about their own adolescence, and it's still true about kids today, there is no bigger fan of music than the 14 to 20-year-old, teenager. It is the time when I think people are most passionate about going out to hear their bands they love. They want to get out there, and I think it's where bands, build a great following among, folks that age that they sometimes carry through their whole lives. And I think it's a shame when those kids can't go out to see their heroes. Now, some places, some clubs will allow all ages to enter, and then they'll stamp your hand if you can drink or can't drink. That's troublesome to a lot of parents who don't necessarily want their kids to go to those shows. And I think that, the problem with the more classic all-ages show, which is typically going to be earlier in the evening because the venue wants to be able to make money on alcohol later, is it just, it doesn't feel anything like a real rock show. The kids sort of feel like they're being babied, and I think on some level they are. And I guess, the ideal situation is to allow people to do what they want before the show, do what they want after the show, but at the show, have it be a place where anybody would feel welcome. and be able to rock out to the music that they love.
All right. Well, I mean, Lee Moore, in addition to being someone that presents shows, you're also a mother. You're going to have a daughter that is going to be near that age where you're like, I really want to see a show, but I can't go because it's an ID show. You're here talking about how sort of essential it is to the music. How do you rectify that?
Well, I know it's my turn now to agree with Will, and
all about bringing people together.
One of the sort of sad ironies of a club like the new club that just opened in New York, Les Poissons Rouges, is that, a kid can't go hear Simona Dinerstein, classical pianist at Les Poissons Rouges because they have a drinking policy, which is a big drag. And I agree with Will about that age, the teenage years, 14 to 21, where they need to be there and they need to hear this music. And I have a couple years to figure it out with my daughter, but I think in all ages, I'm all in favor of all ages shows, and I think that there is a way to figure out a way of not allowing drinking, underage drinking, and I think it's really the venues not really wanting to take the trouble or pay the extra staff. I mean, it's really all about the economics of that, and it's going to be up to the nonprofits to deal with that.
That's Lee Moore Tomer. She's WNYC's executive producer of music programming. On the line, we have Will Lehman, the jazz critic who writes for PopMatters.com, NPR, and other publications. Let's find out a little bit about, let's find out what some other Soundcheck listeners think. Rosemary is in New York. Rosemary, what do you think about the role of drinking in music?
I think it shouldn't really be there. Talking about economics, it's more a social issue. In Europe, they don't have this issue. People are allowed to drink in Europe. You learn to drink responsibly. And children here are not allowed to do that. And to make a rule not to drink at a concert, to me, is absurd because it's all part of the sociability. And alcohol will come into a concert whether you want it to or not. And legalizing it at a concert allows the concert owner, the hall, to say to someone who is unruly, ouch, you cannot drink in this condition here. And I think the whole question boils down to the way we Americans treat alcohol.
Thanks, Rosemary, for your call, bringing up a good point about Europe and about responsibility. We've got another comment from Amelia in Brooklyn that's sort of on the other side of the fence. She posted a comment on our website that says, banning alcohol at live shows? That's not so rock and roll. I think it's bad enough the kids in Williamsburg don't dance. Let's not discourage them anymore. Lee Moore and Will, dancing at shows, a completely different Soundcheck Smackdown. But I want to thank the both of you. Lee Moore Tomer is WNYC's executive producer of music programming. And Will Lehman is a jazz critic who writes for Pop Matters, NPR, and other publications. To the both of you, thanks very much.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure, Joel.
This is Soundcheck.
Morning fog with our hearts that thumping and you, a brown eyed girl.
If you're headed to see this guy, Van Morrison, at a concert in England, you won't be able to consume a drink. But you can tell us what you think about it still. The conversation continues on our website at WNYC.org. Just go to the Soundcheck page. Still to come, Seattle singer-songwriter Damian Jurado, known for his unique, moody songs, will perform live. Tomorrow, body parts in song. New research shows that the eyes are the most frequently crooned about part in genres from R&B to heavy metal. We'll try and put our finger on this research tomorrow. You're listening to Soundcheck.
Do you remember when we used to sing? Sha-la-la.